Welcome to the Founders Table. I'm the founder of 2050 Community. This week on the Founders Table, we're talking with our friend, DJ, and legendary man about London, Mr. Russ Jones of Hackney GT Clothing Label. Russ has been associated with historic parties such as the Blue Note, London Calling, Passing Cutoff, and record label Far Out Recordings. I know you're going to...
All right, well, good morning, Russ. How are you?
All good. Afternoon in the UK, as it happens.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you got your lunch going.
I've turned it off, especially for you.
I get this special treatment.
You do indeed.
Well, you know, it's true. We have known each other a very long time, Russ. And I was thinking about it the other day. It is insane. I think it's like plus 20 years at this point.
Yeah, it must be 97, something like that, 98.
But I was thinking like 96, 97. And then, come to find out, you were hanging out in New York prior to that at the same parties that I was at. I just didn't know you were there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, right? When we were talking about Giant Step, and then you were coming over to New York doing that whole thing. Yeah. We were there.
Wow. So, there you go.
Yeah. So the Mitchells have been stalking you for a really long time. Yeah, well, you've been cherished friend of the family, which thanks for coming on the show.
Well,
what have you been up to? Because stuff is mental out there. Seriously, what's going on in London?
Not so much, like everywhere, I guess. But it's good. For me, it's good because, you know, there's always this FOMO thing going on and I enjoy being out. And all of a sudden, there isn't that pressure. It's like, you know, I can
relax a little bit. Now so, we can feel like the old people we are.
Yeah.
Stay at home and have a cuppa.
Going to bed early, getting up early, lots of working out, gardening.
Nice.
Bit of work. So.
Bit of yoga.
Yeah, well, and creativity. Well, I did my own little broadcast for a month, pretty much every day from my kitchen for an hour. Food, healthy food, music, just spontaneous. And we reached out to 700 people one day, so that was pretty good.
Brilliant. Mm. Yeah, isn't it? It's amazing how easy it's become to do.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it as well, and it's like all of a sudden growing up, to stand in front of a camera or put a mic in front of I think most of us, it wasn't culturally part what we were used to, so you'd be very nervous.
And so
it's so much more natural, and particularly for young people, you know, like they can strike a pose just like that. It's like, wow, you know, like my generation, we were just like horrified to stand in front of a camera. Big changes like that, but yeah, fun. It is fun.
Is it? That's amazing. And I was saying on our last show, you know, we're lucky because we have the luxury to be having a good time during this situation. So thank goodness for that.
Well,
some of us are making, you know, the best of the time we can. And so your people, everybody around you basically is doing okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
When you say luxury, I think that's for me for sure, and hopefully for you, but definitely not for everybody. So if you do have that luxury, then you damn better use it, really. So,
right.
If you're a family who's been stuck in a council, you know, in a high rise with not even a balcony.
Yeah, not so fun.
That could be tough. So
yeah, it is tough. So you are focusing on your fashion brand at the moment, isn't it? Tell us about that. How did that start? Why cycling? I mean, I was there a little. I kind of remember meeting up with you during that time. But tell the world, because it's really quite interesting.
I worked in music for many, many years. And it was becoming harder and harder with the kind of digital age coming on just to make a living out of music other than performing. And I've done a lot of DJing and loved it, but kind of creatively coming to the end of that, and it wore me out. It actually kind of pretty much made me ill, the late nights and all of that. And that was, I just felt that I always and creatively, you know, kind of after a while, putting one piece of music on after another, or one record after another, it's like, you know, where else can you go with that? And
yeah,
I wanted to do other things, and I'd known that for quite a while, really. So, and cycling has always been a big passion of mine, and I had it in mind for a while that I'm going to create a cycle jersey, or maybe one day I'd have a team or something. And then I just started doing research just randomly one day, and found that in China, there was just like absolute thousands of factories making sportswear, and you could do it quite easily. So that was kind of like, oh, okay, this can be done. And I had no knowledge of fashion industry, no knowledge of really making anything or running a business like that. But I'm kind of the eternal optimist, and I just thought, I can do that. Little did I know how hard it would be. Hardest thing I've ever attempted to do. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's manufacturing something. Well,
yeah,
when you're self-employed, creative, freelance person, you know, it's very simple, really. It's kind of almost very hand to mouth. And but when you've got to start designing things and making things and exporting or importing stuff and shipping things and, you know, technical fabrics and patterns and setting up limited companies and, you know, so many things, so many things.
No one would have ever imagined you wanting to do any of those things.
No. Stop control.
All the boring stuff.
So all of that. Yeah. I mean, to have an idea, create a design, and then, you know, send it to a factory, and then, I mean, the first order I did, and when it came back, I couldn't open the box quick enough. It was like, it's extremely exciting. And then when you first see people you don't know wearing your stuff on the street or something, or, you know, it's a real buzz. It's a real, real buzz. So
where are you getting your influence from in terms of the designs and your creative strategy for the brands? What's influencing you?
Do you know, because you put to me like a few questions before the interview, and where, you know, what are my inspirations and who's my inspiration? And I really don't, it's not so much who, but kind of where or how. And it's cultural. And for me, it's street culture, really. That's where the inspiration has always come from. And there are people who've inspired me, but they're not people anybody knows or even necessarily I know. I've seen, or, you know, infamous people in a way. But I think so. Yeah, street culture very much. And the whole kind of my background of being a kid growing up in the 80s was skateboarding and BMX and post-punk. So that whole, all of that is still a big inspiration to me. So I love that whole lifestyle that was around that, and kind of counterculture, really. And that still inspires me. Yeah. And I still want to buy into that and pay homage to it. So.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm the same. Yeah, I was wondering, but are you making all the designs yourself, or you have someone in now?
Well, I'm. It's almost like a disability in this kind of digital age. I'm really, really bad with Photoshop and Illustrator.
Oh yeah,
I'm not. I can't even really draw. So I just. But I get ideas. Say it. It can come from anywhere, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I went to someone's house the other day, and they're doing
I know how you do it. I've seen you in
Ashtray. You know,
I
love the colors and the pattern, and I've wow. So, but the inspiration can come from anywhere. So sometimes I see people in the street, and I'm sneaking up behind them to get a photo of them, or ask them if I can take a picture, or it can be just I don't know, all over the place, to be honest. So my thing I'm designing at the moment, I've just done a jersey kind of based on like a kind of Ocean Pacific kind of 1980s Hawaiian kind of vibe.
Oh, nice. Yeah, nice.
And I have not seen that on cycle products, and everything cycle fashion is very conservative at the moment, very black and very minimal. And this is the complete opposite. I've done a bright blue jersey with like a sunset kind of vibe and palm trees. And it really has an 80s feel to it. So I want to kind of carry on down that direction for a little bit. So
that the Santa Cruz vibe.
Exactly, Santa Cruz. Exactly. So yeah, surf and skateboard sort of thing. And I'm looking at old school BMX, old motocross from the 70s.
I love
I'm looking at kind of like cars when they used to have all these kind of decals on the sides and
yeah,
you know, almost like 18 kind of vibe. Or so.
That's awesome. I mean, people have always thought you to be, you're like the quintessential eccentric, but I think your tastes have always been very relatable. You know, I mean, I do remember you before you became the colorful glasses, Russ. but like you can barely remember that because it's such your thing and it's such your look, and it's very relatable. It's very inspiring, I think. The things you draw from are things that people love, but maybe don't know how to pull together as well as you do. Yeah. And so I think that sounds really fun. Actually, what we can do, we'll definitely throw up some photos. Yeah. So that people can see the stuff you're working on. So, we'll make sure they get the links and all that stuff. Yeah. So
with regards to designing, the point being, I can't design. Someone said I'm what they call a creative art director. So what? I get an idea and I pay people to make my ideas happen. So.
That's amazing. Well, that's what I was wondering, because I think at some point, I remember I thought I wanted to get into fashion when I was younger. And so, and I, you know, I'm in New York City. So I was at a special high school. They had a program like that. And I started, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I don't think I want to do all this work. I'm like definitely more of a creative director type than the, patterns and sewing and having to, that stuff is just not for me. But so do you think that the digital space is making your work easier? Is it changing the playing field a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I heard Chris Blackwell from Ireland, who set up Ireland Records, a legendary record label.
He said,
would you do it again? He said, I'd do it again straight away. And he said, like, there's never been a better time, he felt, to run a record label, because you can be your own record label. You can produce your own videos and put them on YouTube. And, you know, everything is accessible. So that's, you know, all of a sudden you can have a shop for $25, $50 a month online, you know, as opposed to having to rent a space or have a market store. So everything's a lot more accessible, but then everybody else is at it. So it's then the difficult, you know, it's not difficult to produce something or even necessarily have a great idea and make something cool, but it's then getting it noticed.
Putting in front of people.
That is the really tricky bit.
Yeah, because the mainstream is flooded. It is flooded. So, I mean, that was part of the reason to do what we're doing now, is to kind of get all of these incredible ideas and people under one umbrella. So at least we can be a one-stop shop for people who want that bespoke, curated sort of, you know, content. And they know they're going to get good fashion, good music, good ideas, you know, good conversation. Because at this point, when I go online, and when I was going online last couple of years, I was just, everything is buried. And you don't know what to believe anymore. You don't know what to tell you. Like, is this fake? Is this, you know, it's very quite toxic at the moment. So it's these awesome stories though are out there. Like you're a gem in the midst of all of that, how you're using the digital space, super positive. And I love it because it's sort of like that age barrier for those of us who are willing to, you know, take the time, you know, we can get in on this too, even though we're kind of past the age starting out. You know, we grew up where things were analog, you know, like we had records, we had to make clothes, we had to sew, you know, all that stuff. But it's changing now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm 51 and I don't have a problem to tell people that. It's like, I think it's amazing that I still can live a pretty, you know, youthful life if I choose to. And I can, young people, they don't have a problem with older people either, you know. So all of a sudden I can relate to my peers or people older and people younger, and those divisions have come down. I mean, we live in divided society in many respects, but I think some respects the age division, it doesn't have to be there like it did before, which is, that's a really positive thing. So
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. And you don't have to have that like corporate, like London office, the overhead, going to, you know, staff, employee, like it gets rid of that whole debacle.
Yeah.
Which really drains your creative energy.
For sure. I think I heard there was a talk on the future of music industry like 15 years ago, and they kind of predicted what's happening now. And what they were saying was there's going to be less in the music industry. There'll probably be less people like Paul McCartney absolutely killing it, but lots more people making a living. So, you know,
that's interesting balance.
I think, you know, for me, I'm at a point in my life where, you know, to get up every day and do something you enjoy and make a living. I don't need to be wealthy. I don't need a lot. You know, actually, I've got a creative idea I want to do at some point. You know, like people do, they do like a photo montage of their kit if they're going on an expedition or bike. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I have.
I think it's about doing like the essential things, doing a photo thing of the essential things I need in life, you know, and it's like one, you know, a pair of Vans, one bicycle. It's like,
I know that question of what is essential is really interesting for sure.
A penguin book, a pair of swimming trunks, a pair of running shoes, a Gore-Tex jacket, you know, one pair of jeans. Like, really, we don't need that much.
Well, we've seen your car, so we kind of know you're already there. You're already there. You got everything. Yeah. You've got like all your bare essentials in there. You could go anywhere. If you just fell off the planet, you'd have everything you needed already in there. I think that's a really cool and interesting lifestyle. But I think that freedom, though, do you feel like, are we going to get it back? You know, how are you? Are you like a caged animal? Like, are you still able to get out and ride? You know, what's been happening with the freedom aspect of lifestyle while all this COVID stuff is going on?
Well, I'm very lucky. I live on somewhere called the Lee Valley, just north of the Olympic Park on the east side of London. So we've got an awful lot of open space here, and we can just go for miles and miles. So it's, I've been out a lot, and it's been amazing.
Nice.
But I don't know, it's probably a little bit of both, but all of a sudden we're all more mindful, and I'm really tuned into birdsong over the last 3 months, and I think I can sit in my kitchen with the back door open and hear birds and know what they are without even seeing them now. It's like I know the robins, and they've got more than one, they've got a song, but they've also got a chirp and it things like that. So, you know, like, I can go and see my robin friends.
Actually, I've had the same situation where you just have time to notice things like that you didn't have before. Yeah. But what's going to happen to the party scene? Because, I mean, that's been huge for you. You've had an incredible influence and also a great time. I imagine you've been at all the best parties in the music scene in London for 30 years. So what's going to happen to parties? Because we can't just keep doing this online, can we?
No, it doesn't really work for me online, even in the gigs. I've watched some and it's good, but I'm a people person. I like to be around people and I like to be out. I don't really, you know, I struggle to sit and watch things on a screen for too long. So I don't, do you know, it's a worry. It's a worry, to be honest.
Is it?
I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. I mean, we're having to start in the UK. We're just starting to have outdoor things starting to happen.
Okay.
But not on a mass scale.
You guys have always had a lot of festivals, really great festivals. And you've been big on that circuit. But so how do you think we manage it? Just smaller?
At the moment, there weren't going to be any festivals really this year.
Now everything's been cancelled.
And I have friends, you know, friends of mine, they their business is running stages and supplying bands, really quirky creative stuff for festivals all year long. And they've built up the most amazing company. The guy who runs it, he'd become an MBE. He was awarded by the Queen for his work with.
Lovely. Yeah.
And you know, and they've been like 20, 25 years building this most incredible company and brand. And it's. It could all just come to nothing.
Could be struggling. Yeah. Everybody's struggling. Nobody saw this coming.
No, I don't know.
A world where there's no live in-person events.
No, I don't. I wish I had the answer. I mean, theatre is very much the same. It's tough. And I don't know. I think we entered this COVID, I did, thinking this kind of period, oh, well, this is 2 or 3 months and then we'll go back to normal. But that's not the case, unfortunately.
Yeah. So do you think that there is, I mean, I ask you this question because I know you are someone who is used to having to bounce back. You know, you've had some pretty significant challenges in your life. Even as you mentioned earlier, you know, you got quite ill and you're used to having to think ahead and adapt and plan. And I mean, do you think that's just a personal gift you have, or is that just what this is going to require?
I don't know. I think creative industry, creative people, they are that. That, you know, what's on the tin is what's on the label is what is in the tin. They are creative people,
yeah.
And you know, in New York, in London, in many cities, but it's a struggle. It's been a struggle the last few years with venues closing. But it's amazing, despite property going up and gentrification, how they cannot seem to kill those creative spaces. They keep popping up. So that's what creative people do. They do have tenacity, you know. I guess maybe I have that. I enjoy life too much to want to bend over to just kind of keel over. But and I think creative people would. They will try their damnedest. They are to continue and do what they do. And we're proper creative people, not so-called in kind of speech marks creatives, but proper creative people. A lot of us, the community, yourself, I'm sure, we don't buy into 9 to 5. We don't buy into, you know.
Yeah.
So we have to find another way of making things work for us.
I've wondered, though, you know, if we're going to be losing a large part of our audience to this online lifestyle, though. You know, there's a mainstream population of people that really is gravitating towards it. And it's interesting because there's maybe a difference between content creators and the audience, you know, where if the audience is super comfortable being at home, being online, doing the, you know, Zoom chats and performances and small parties, I wonder if the population is going to change. And then we're, you know, creatives are going to have to move along with that. Or if we're going to end up, you know, it's a very weird time that no one anticipated at all.
No.
But I've just noticed, like, the reaction I've had is just to be like, ugh, like, the amount of stuff out there now, it's like this mound. When I think about it, it's just this mountain of stuff, a lot of it garbage. But you know, it's wonderful people can sit at home and feel satisfied and feel creative and feel like they have a space, but we know a lot of it is toxic. And you know, I think that's been my concern, is that this is going to create a toxic culture. And you know, the audience that we would normally have, what's going to happen to them over the course of time? Where are they going to be at, you know? Are they going to want to come back out and get back to normal life and keep connecting with other people, other human beings? Yeah, you're hopeful. Yeah.
No, I mean, well, you see it all. I mean, I see it right on my doorstep. I live, we've got somewhere called Hackney Marshes, which is a huge open space where I live. And the kids have been having parties over there all through lockdown. You know, we've even had helicopters flying over above.
Well, yeah.
To the police trying to kind of, you know, clamp down
monitor.
On it.
Yeah,
young people. I mean, it's summer. They want to fraternize as well, you know. So why not?
Yeah, so-called fraternization laws in England that I was hearing about.
Yeah, so.
How, I mean, you're not having outdoor parties, presumably.
No.
So, but you get out and you do your cycling. Do you have, I mean, in the past, you've done some amazing challenges, international rides and things like that. Do you have anything planned?
Well, I should have been at international races this summer. I should have been in Romania last month. And I was going to, the plan was trying to avoid aeroplanes, and I was going to get a train to Berlin and then cycle from Berlin to Romania and then do a race.
Yeah.
And that's not happened. But the, I've just, yeah, the first races, they're just starting to come back. So there's one in a cross-country triathlon in on the south coast in September. Wow. They've just announced. So I've just put my entry in for that. Yeah, I mean, again, with for me, I mean, it'd be interesting. I have these discussions like I'm having with yourself, and it, in some respects, that kind of FOMO thing, you know, is, it also relates to sports and activity, and that.
Oh yeah.
I can go out and do things, but in a more relaxed manner, which is quite refreshing as well. So I'm quite enjoying not having. I love racing. There's something. It's so the adrenaline of it is amazing, and there's a community base when you so many. I mean, you know, there's a change, isn't there? There's so many people want to be in the yoga or running or cycling or
self-care.
Doing things. Yeah, eating well.
Yeah,
you know, and I
think a lot of people are saying that this is a healthy change. Yeah,
it's so positive. I mean, this is pre-COVID, but even more now. So,
yeah.
You know, and I like the next thing, at least my prediction, is trail running. I see the beginnings of people just want to get out in forests and countryside with their friends, and you go running, you know.
Yeah, and I love that, actually. Yeah.
I think that's going to be the next big thing. Running here is just huge, and trail running, like not races particularly, but or long races. So yeah.
Although I heard like that the bike sales went through the roof more than ever before, and so that's quite interesting too. So it was more people cycling, just not in these large competitions. So there's just like more people outside being free, having healthy lifestyles, maybe, you know, nobody has to commute to work anymore. So it's like people just having a good time.
Yeah, no, they're, apparently there's hardly a brand new bicycle available in the UK at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's the same here. Because I was actually thinking of getting one because I'm right by the beach and I get a little bit bored of walking. I also similarly, you know, I punished myself for years doing fitness stuff and, you know, my injuries and stuff. So I said, you know, a bike would be brilliant. They've got a nice bike pack that goes right along the beach. I couldn't even get a bike. Yeah. I was like, are you serious? Like, I mean, now at some point, you know, if I want to go super expensive, but I leave that to you guys. I don't need a super bespoke, like crazy bike. I just want to go up and down the beach with it. But and I thought maybe I can get some roller skates.
Well, that's,
I want to bring that back. That's like my favorite thing to do. You know,
that's another prediction. I can see that happening already. Old school, 8 wheels.
Yeah.
Not inline.
Yeah. So I've done it. I mean, like when I've gone to LA in the past and I'm like, I'll go down to the beachfront and make people go roller skating with me. And it's my favorite thing to do. Because it's ridiculous. Yeah.
I'm there. I'm up for that. I'm really, really.
Yeah. You can come join me. So I think that's what, I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity, but this is what I keep saying, opportunities and challenges, right? It's just a very weird time with a lot of very interesting things on the table. You know, and I wanted to bring up, actually, you know, you have done a lot of international work. And you've been all over the globe and you've, you know, what's your background recently doing the cumbia and you have like a lot of like an Afro-Colombian and Afro-Brazilian and all this kind of stuff. I know in the past we had talked about you had an interest in African texture and textiles and design and maybe integrating that into your work. We've got a whole lot of African listeners that might be interested in that.
I was definitely inspired by African prints, and I found shops in East London just importing African fabrics. Incredible, the batiks and different prints. They're so beautiful. Yeah, and I was looking at how you could incorporate that into cycle fashion, I guess, and kind of lifestyle sportswear. But the discussion with yourself was about this whole thing of cultural appropriation.
Right.
Which, you know, some people are really quick to jump down on people taking ethnic kind of design or whatever. But I listened to a BBC talk and a philosopher, and it was a whole week, a series of talks, lectures on ethnicity, on race, on culture and identity. And that was one of the questions what was thrown to him in the Q&A was about cultural appropriation. And he said, even it's not, you know, there are people who are a bit too righteous about it. It was kind of what he was saying. And that, where does that stop? Because even if you say, I want to have a Nigerian print, actually, like, Nigeria is a massive country and there's huge tribes and different cultures. And
absolutely.
So, you know, you could say people from the north of Nigeria are appropriating southern Nigerian creativity, if you know. So
is this saying, like, when does it stop? Like, how low, how detailed do we get?
So you know, people, someone's claiming, oh, that's my culture, and actually it's not quite true. That's kind of what he was saying, I think.
There's a lot of gray areas in it, for sure.
So it's, you know,
even like in that conversation we did have, which was ages ago, you were super sensitive to that. And that's where you had said, hey, you know, looking for actual African artists who might want to participate in something like that. And because in our last interview, you know, Point Blank, who's over in Nairobi, he was talking about the same thing. And he was talking about how, you know, they did collaborations with Tanzanian artists from the Tinka tribe. And it was a process. He agreed. He said there was a process. They were not just allowed to use those things or, you know, disseminate that stuff. But then it got the locals involved. And so I think, that's a really cool way to do it as well.
Definitely.
And
my whole thing, really, whether it be music, fashion, whatever we do, but it's trying to bring some equality to the world, you know, and opportunity. So, and being a white man from a Western country, I've had it very easy. And I can give back, or we can create projects, which I have been involved in different things in Kenya and Sri Lanka, different countries and young people. If there's ways where we can help create business in those countries and bring out the creativity and create an equal playing field. That's what has to be our goal, doesn't it? Whatever we're involved in life, everybody should have an equal opportunity. So if I can do that, then great. You know, or if I can, one of my inspirations is the old school philanthropists who, you know, the industrialists of the kind of the 20th century or the 19th century. And that, you know, they redistributed wealth in a big way, and they looked after their workers and things like that. That has to be the goal, really, if we can
absolutely
do that.
Yeah, and I think that's what, with the community, you know, we're looking at how to use the online platforms in order to get down into the trenches of people that normally don't connect with anyone at all. I mean, because there's levels to that. You know, there's like the neighbor across the street, or the guy across town, or the guy under the bridge. And then there's the guy maybe under, you know, like there are levels. And as you know, I've been traveling a lot internationally through the places where, you know, it's a level that doesn't get talked about much. And so those are the people I'm super interested in. You know, I want to see what they have to say. What are their lifestyles like at this time, and how can we collaborate? Because they have benefit to us too. Like, whenever I go to Africa, which I've been several times, and you go and you see, they're so much better at relationships than we are on some level. And like, found like community and like talking and taking time. And whenever I've traveled, even recently, When I traveled with my father internationally, and we said, oh my, he said, I think we're psychotic. I think Americans legitimately might be psychotic because we, I know you would probably agree.
No comment.
Most Brits, yeah.
I'm saying nothing.
So I take it on board. I'm like, it's insane. The way we live is insane. And we have something to learn. We have a lot to learn, to be honest. And so that's why I love going overseas, because it showed me that, you know, I don't have to live with this insanity. And it's not even just about the pace. It's about, you know, their priorities, how they do things, the way they do things. And so I think there's a really great opportunity for collaboration there. You know, we're so, like, on the American side, in the UK, it's similar. We're so, like, material heavy. Like, we have all of the things, but we're missing kind of the soul of the things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I love that.
We live in fear cultures, and in the West, we have a lot to lose, I guess. Or we think we have a lot to lose.
Right.
That's the issue, really.
That's interesting. Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Whereas maybe what you're saying, like that carefree or more open spirit that you'll find overseas is a result of having less and having different priorities as a result of that. No, it's true. I think most in New York, when I was in New York, my hugest panic my entire life was I was going to be homeless. That's the fear in New York, is I'm never going to be able to sustain the amount of money that it takes to live. And you don't think like, oh, well, leave, move and go somewhere else. You just think like, okay, I'm born here, I live here. You just think that that's the way to do things. And I lived with internal panic. Like, that was not debilitating, but drove all of my decisions for a long time. Yeah. And then you come to realize, you travel and you maybe go, that's crazy. That's psychotic. Mm-hmm. That you're living your entire life in fear of not having a home, like a place to sleep, a place, because the location you live in doesn't really support that as a value. New York is like, yeah, you know what? $4,000 a month for rent is reasonable. You know, you're like, what? Yeah, you know what it's like. London is the same. Yeah. It's exactly the same. So, you know, trying to just even have the basics at some point, we just live with so much fear of that. And somehow, whenever I've gone to some of these places, like even you go to Brazil or, you know, there's just a different approach, really. There definitely is a different approach. And so that's what, I mean, I would love, I'm going to put the word out to some of the guys that we have, that we're in touch with in the community, in terms of, you know, maybe collaboration coming out of something with some designs or, yeah, that'd be awesome. I think part of what I'm doing at the moment is looking at bringing some of you guys into the work that I want to try to build here in my community, because I live in an arts district and we have a lot of cool stuff that's starting out here that they're funding, a lot of programs and festivals and events. I live 3 blocks from where all the festivals are supposed to be. So everything was canceled for this year, but we're looking at hopefully next year to be sponsoring and doing some 2050C international collaboration stuff. So you never know, maybe we can get you involved in something like that with some of the African guys, you know, just to bring everybody together and, you know, share the love, share the experience, come out of this COVID thing hopefully stronger than we were. So how are you? I'm asking everyone who comes on the show to share, you know, how is it that you are keeping sane during this time? Do you have a special playlist or a special regimen or?
Yeah, well, I think just discipline for myself and just keeping routines, which is something I've kind of worked on for a while before COVID, it was even a thought. But just that's what works for me, just really consistency and routines every day. yeah, and just keep it and a determination that going into COVID and lockdown that I'd keep the routines up. So going for me, I don't need to be up all night anymore.
Who could do that?
Yeah, so it's quite strict to getting to bed at a reasonable time and getting up early. I'm up at 7 o'clock, quarter to seven, and I'm spending. I've had several kind of bouts of sickness, but I had a period where it was almost like my body was collapsing, and I had permanent backache, and I do a serious a regime every day of stretching and core exercises. We started off with simple press-ups and sit-ups, and now it's about 45, 50 minutes of stuff.
Yeah.
I love it. So that's part of eating really well, just really strict on that. And those things that keep me sane. Obviously, like this conversation now, make a big effort, even though I couldn't see people, making a big effort to have call people up, you know, video chats, keeping in touch with people.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, so all of those things. Taking a little bit of mindfulness, listening to bird song, and it's not been a problem for me, but it is because I guess I am. I enjoy life and I'm motivated, so I get bored very easy. Do you find that for yourself?
I hyper focus on massive, complex tasks. So yes, it might be the answer if I wasn't so good at finding those.
Exactly. So I get bored very easy. I don't get bored because I keep myself at I've always got more than enough things.
You know what I'm interested in hearing about is this special diet you've got going on, because I know for me, my COVID diet, you don't want my COVID diet. Okay. I have to struggle to think about the last time I saw a vegetable, and it's terrible. I forced myself to eat some fruit yesterday. I was like, wow, like I could feel it running through my body. I haven't had anything healthy. So what, you're the complete opposite, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's your diet like?
Well, I'm at the point where if I eat unhealthy, I just don't feel right anymore. So
I've
got really sensitive to it. But I'm trying to stick to this 16-hour intermittent fasting now. Do you know about that?
Really? Yeah, sure. But explain it.
Well, it's pretty much what it says. So I try and finish eating for the day by 6 o'clock in the evening, and then I won't eat till 10 o'clock the next morning at the earliest. So you have a 16-hour period of not eating. And it gives your body, you use a lot of energy in digestion, so it gives your body an awful lot of time to not use that energy on digestion, but use that body on replenishing your body and resting and healing and all of those things. So and it works.
I just find it so funny that this is the new thing that, like, you know, Americans and Europeans have to do to, like, stay fit, is to stop eating. It's like the complete opposite from the other half of the world.
Yeah.
Like, the new thing is to not eat so much. But I also know that you have a really dope diet too, where you don't eat certain things and you eat a lot. I've seen you do it. Do you have a special? No, I mean, for me, it's noteworthy because I don't eat like that.
Right. Steffi, I mean, I am probably obsessive compulsive, so.
I think you've like, is it like, are you paleo? Are you like, what's the thing you do?
Flexitarian. I occasionally eat vegetables. That was a joke. Yeah, poor joke. Yeah.
But nuts and berries guy.
At home, I'm pretty much vegetarian or pescatarian. I do eat fish. And then my mum insists on giving me meat when I go there, so I will eat meat at my mother's. Meat is not too often, but also aware that I'm reading quite a lot about how much we need protein. So, you know, absolutely. we really We really, it's really, so how we get the protein, you know, and you can get that from nuts and pulses and eggs or dairy, but yeah, you need to make, so, but yeah, I'm up to something like 30 different supplements a day I'm doing in total. Or something. Yeah. So I'm making like my own kefir, kombucha.
Really?
Superfood porridge with just everything in it.
Wow. So that's why you have a good cooking show. I would love to see some of that. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, soaking seeds every day for the next day. And a lot of things.
Oh, really?
We've been making kimchi, Japanese, Korean kimchi. So yeah, a lot of fermented foods.
Wow.
So loads of vegetables were growing and salads here and herbs. And
I don't understand how you have time to do that and run a fashion label. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, I guess with all the extra time you have not going out, isn't it? Yeah.
I get up at 7 and I don't stop till 10 or 11 at night most days.
Yeah, so. Right, exactly. That sounds super fun. I want to try to catch that, or maybe you can push something our way, because I know you're going to do some shows on 2050C. You're going to be doing a DJ set, correct? You can do whatever you want. You know, you can, if you want to share some of that food love our way, that would be amazing. What kind of music can people expect to hear on your 2050C show?
Yeah, so my background is going to
be, that'll be Mixcloud, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Mixcloud as well. I'll probably put it up, but I won't program it too much, so it'll just be freestyle and see what happens. But I mean, my thing the last few years, and it's trends. A lot of us are on is tropical music, really. So African and Latin music, but with a tropical feel. That's really what I love, and there's so much old music there. Finding out, really, never really saw the light of day other than in the region it was made, and all of a sudden it's getting international exposure, and that is absolutely, I'm just loving that music. And the latest thing is like Arabic music, like kind of James Brown, you know, like funk bands from Lebanon or Liberia, or I don't know, not Liberia,
yeah,
from
I would love, yeah.
So all of that is all of a sudden getting exposed from the 70s, and it's really fantastic.
Oh, well, I love it.
So there's a label called Habiji Funk, I think it's called, and he's just specialising on reissuing all this kind of Arabic funk music from the 70s, which is incredible. So
like, thank you.
and then there's some always great new music coming out, and this is the beauty of the age we live in and the internet and digital age. And you know, some kid in a barrio in Colombia can make incredible music. They haven't got to get it pressed. They haven't got to have distribution. They can master it themselves and put it up for sale on Bandcamp and create their own videos. And the videos can be really creative, and they don't have to cost much money. And they've got great locations wherever they are. So I was making compilations of this kind of thing called in the early 2000s called Future World Funk, and we used to sell really well. And it was basically looking at where dance music and dance culture met world music. And it was a new thing. It's called Global Beats now, but we didn't even have that term at the time. But
I
remember the second volume we did, we were selling really well, but to create to find 12 tracks of quality to put on a compilation was a struggle.
Hard work. Full-time work.
Yeah. Now I could find 12 great tracks in a day, you know.
But that was part of the fun back then, was like searching and going to the record shops. And I mean, it was like a real thing.
They weren't even in the record shops. I had to find the producers and find the people and interact with them and get, it was difficult. It was really hard. And but it was like, you know, like the Brazilian drum and bass thing. And then there was Bangor came through, and then it was this kind of, we had a few years later, like a whole new Balkan music scene, which was really fun. And then, as you mentioned, the cumbia coming out of, originally actually, cumbia is Colombian, but the first stuff was coming out of Mexico, the kind of new cumbia. Out of Monterrey, of a guy called Toy Selector, who gone on to do massive things. And mixing that traditional cumbia and accordions and stuff with with hip hop, and they did it really, really well. And I mean, that's become a massive thing. And you've got El Dusty, you know, had like worldwide massive hits now and doing that music. And it's I mean, that's so it's great. It's so exciting when what the digital platform has opened up for us.
Yeah, you have to know where to look. Hopefully you can, you know, in your show, let people open people up to that whole thing, because I love it. But I, you know, if I'm with you or you take me to, like, it's brilliant. It's always like a master class of like excellent global views. But for me to sit down in front of a laptop and find that stuff, not going to happen. I just don't have the headspace for it. Yeah, so it's brilliant to have a show, someone who can, like, literally just put it at the forefront. Because even someone like me, I would think that a lot of that stuff used to be analog vinyl type things. Like, how can you even reissue this stuff from the 70s, from Lebanon or wherever it is? Like, I can't imagine the massive project that would have to be.
That for those guys who do it, generally they're very moral with them, very principled in the way they do it, so they won't reissue stuff until they found the rights to the, you know, the owners of the recordings, and make sure they get paid. I mean, most of the people who record this stuff, they're like taxi drivers in
I bet,
Ontario or somewhere, you know, or like there's a Somalian funk band.
Yeah.
And I found their videos on YouTube a while ago. I was like, oh, it's amazing. That. Someone should reissue it. And then somebody did. But these guys all live in London now. They're not in Somalia.
Oh, right.
Reformed in London and doing gigs. But, yeah, so... So yeah,
they had their one hit and then bounce. They were like, right, I'm out of here. Yeah.
What a blessing.
Interesting that you mentioned Somalia, because that's one of the next places that, you know, we're hoping to bring some people on from out there. Do they have a funk scene or a global beat scene that you're tracking?
I don't know what they have now.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah, that's the question that I just pushed out today.
For sure. There'd be a rap scene. I mean, and there's people doing
great... there's definitely a rap scene. There's definitely a rap scene.
Also, there's people covering the fashions in these countries. So there's you know, people like some of the fashions doing photo essays, really, or photo documentaries of street fashion in all these places. I mean, there's like girl biker gangs and, you know, kids skateboarding in different countries.
We're going to try to, you know, highlight some of that stuff. I love it. That's literally where my headspace is. Like you're saying, you know, your inspiration is coming from the man in the street, and I'm the same, but I love to see what people are doing over the fence. You know, the more obscure the place, the better. For me, that's kind of I want to see these dark corners and like find it super fascinating. And now that we can't get out and travel and do it in person, you know, we're just doing our best to kind of, you know, we're going to get a lot of these artists on and, you know, get people to submit. But you have to realize that, you know, in some of these places, you know, it's quite normal for them to not even have access, you know, to the capabilities to put that stuff up online. You know, that's one of the challenges that we're actually having. It's a normal issue for some people.
For sure.
If they're not living like right in the middle of an urban area, they're like, I don't have a smartphone, I don't have internet, or they have to go a long ways to get it. And so we're trying to capture stuff from that, you know, the depths from where those people are at and kind of bring it back out. And so it's a fun challenge. It's a worthwhile challenge, you know, to go. We're trying to get people out to some of those places and see how we can support and bring. It's not about getting people online. It's more just about getting, you know, their stories heard and getting their faces seen and kind of hearing what they have to say.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. I hope so. I mean, I hope it can stay fun, you know, because here, I don't know what's happening by you guys, but they're saying that things are starting to peak again. The virus is starting to peak here again, and they're like shutting back down. So, I mean, this is a really weird period of time, you know. I mean, we were hoping, everybody was hoping to have traveled by now, you know, and gone back overseas and kind of, but now they're saying, you know, it's a whole nother round. So it's a really strange, unstable times, to be honest.
It is. I, who knows what the future holds, but
Yeah, but at least we know that you're gonna be healthy and happy and for putting sure. out good clothes. And so I can't wait to see the stuff, because that's like the Santa Cruz thing is kind of my thing too, which is why I live at the beach. And you know, I'm in a community that is quite like a surf and beach community, and I love hearing the skateboards going down the street, and I mean longboards, the whole thing. Go to the beach, people are surfing. So that's definitely a lot of fun. So to see the bike element brought into that is definitely something I will look out for. So we're going to wrap up, but I'm going to make sure that we can, you know, we'll put the links to make sure people can get to your site and get your stuff and connect with you personally. And we will definitely put out the information when you're going to start your show on Mixcloud, your Global Beats show. Looking forward to that for sure. Anything else that you want everyone to know about?
Just people to look out for each other, please.
That's yeah, all. Right. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. We let's use this time to just, yeah, reflect and yeah, spread some love.
Slow down. Yeah.
Slow down, spread some love, you know? That's that without getting too deep, but
that's simple.
We got to get beyond being, I think most of us, we've been selfish beings, and you know, we got to get beyond that somehow.
So. Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely forcing the opportunity there.
Yeah.
Well, Ross, you've been a lovely being, a lovely friend and a lovely artist for as long as we've known you. So thank you for sharing
My pleasure.
The love with us and sharing the love to these international communities. And stay safe out there, stay healthy, and we will be hearing more from you very soon.
Cool. Thank you, Steffi. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, no worries. More soon. Ciao.